Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
And we return to the record. Presentation from the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. The applicant calls Sarah Hatfield.
Please state. Good morning. Please state your name and spell it.
Yes, my name is Sarah Hatfield. First name Sarah, S-A-R-A-H. Last name Hatfield, H-A-T-F-I-E-L-D.
And do you swear or affirm that the testimony provided in today's hearing be the truth?
I swear.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I will pull up my screen here. Great. Can everybody see the renderings on the page here?
Yes.
Thank you. So I'll just start out with a little bit of background for myself on the project. I'm the principal in charge of the project in our office, and I've been working with our team since 2019 through design and permitting, working both on the design and managing it through the permitting process. Through that, I worked extensively with the planner, both Allison Whitworth and Tammy Garrett, to take the project through design review and to focus on the rezone criteria analysis as part of this rezone request. As Tammy's mentioned, it's 91 units of about 40,000 square feet. And of the 91 units, 7 of those will be provided as MHA affordable units through the performance option. So those units will be provided in the building. And we found that the through the rezone criteria, that the additional housing provided by the rezone was supported by the growth targets and neighborhood plans for the area, as well as the expansion of the light rail transit service and services in the area. The presentation here will focus on the transition to the east property as part of the massing and zone transition. We did find in looking through the different zones, as Tammy mentioned, that the NC2 zone was the appropriate zone for the 30 feet of the split lot. There's already so much NC250 above in the area that we know that that's appropriate, and that 30 feet of a split zone lot is not feasible for the variety or diversity of housing that would be intended in a low-rise zone. So as we look at the images here, the rendering on the top is a view from the corner of Roosevelt and Northeast 71st. So looking at the frontage of the building along the arterial. And the image on the bottom is the view of the northeast corner from 71st. And we'll be talking about the transition and the stepping to the east neighbor here. And just a quick overview of the plan. So again, with the Roosevelt on the left side of the page, we have organized the primary building entry, lounge, and residential amenity areas on the corner. And then the building services, such as the trash pickup and the electrical vault down at the southwest corner. So of the high impact uses are all located along Roosevelt. And as we come around the corner to Northeast 71st, we transition to residential units facing the street and along the east property line. So as we are first talking about the height transition to the LR zone, I just wanted to mention how the average grade is calculated, that the height is determined by. So average grade is calculated based on existing grade of points around the building, and they are averaged together along the perimeter. And then the height limit is measured from there. 55 feet for the NC2 zoning, and then a 4-foot parapet bonus, and then a penthouse bonus above that. So because we're averaging grade along the slope of the site, it is going to, the calculations will pull the average grade lower to bring the overall effective height limit down. So in this view, we can start to see how the building height steps down from its highest point at the corner, and then stepping down about 3 feet to the darker massing, and then the final step down is about 10 feet lower than that to this brick modulation facing the neighbor. When you're standing out on the street and looking at the building, the lowest portion there is about 34 foot 9 in experiential height. And we'll find and see through the other graphics that this is consistent with the 30 foot height limit of an LR1 zone that would be next door. This diagram is I cut through the site looking north with the zone boundary noted here. So everything in yellow is shown as the development potential for the LR1 portion of the site. Everything in blue is the potential NC2 development of the site. And again, we can see with that average grade coming across here. The dark dashed line is the outline of the proposed project, so we can see the stepping that takes place as it moves down and towards the east neighbor, again with a 12-foot-6 setback at the closest portion, and then stepping back to 15-foot-9. The next slide is a plan view of the required setbacks for the split zone. So again, the boundary shown here. For LR1, a 5-foot setback would be required facing the street, and then the side setbacks to the neighbor would be 5-foot minimum and 7-foot average. LR1 zoning also has a facade length limitation that would be 65 feet that could be within 15 feet of the side lot line. So the dark dashed line here again shows the proposed building footprint as it relates to those setbacks. And we can see that we are providing a greater setback to the street as well as to the east neighbor to create additional buffer. The next slide here shows the proposal to the compared to the NC255 potential. So this would be as if the the allowable development for the NC zone that has been requested. So the dark red in this diagram shows the NC2 development potential, which has a no setback is required 13 feet above grade, and then a 10-foot minimum side setback to the adjacent property. And again, this is showing that we've given increased setbacks even from what would be allowed by the NC2 development potential. This slide shows just a little bit more experientially how these are working together. So the increased setbacks that we're providing to the east give us 7 to 8 feet of area that we can use for a landscape buffer and soften the transition to the neighbor. We do have a secondary exit point that's in the east yard but that's primarily the building exit, so a very secondary use in that area, and showing again how the elements step down to the adjacent property. Additionally, there are smaller windows that are facing to the east to minimize impacts. And again, kind of looking at the landscaping in the east yard, where particularly a couple of the wax myrtle tree and the fine maple were selected for their ability to screen and provide a lush buffer to the neighbor. And here we can see the sort of collection of all these elements together in an experiential view. And see, I covered this one already. Lastly, looking at the just a little bit more of the building organization, as far as having the central circulation and core is brought to the center of the building, where again reduces its height impacts to the east, and the location of the common area roof deck at the northwest corner of the building to again move it away from any of the neighbors and towards the NC2 zone. And that concludes the overview that I've put together here.
Can you click the screen? I can't tell if we're on mute or not. And does that conclude your presentation, Ms. Hatfield?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. Any questions for her, Mr. Gribben? And I think you're on. I think you've been muted. We had to mute some participants, and you got caught up in that. Oh, and there you go.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
I do have just a few follow-up questions, Ms. Hatfield. I'm going to show you one of the figure that's from Exhibit 16, and can you just orient to what we're looking at here and explain directionally what we're looking at in this graphic?
Yes, so this image is taken as if it's standing on Northeast 71st looking south, so to the right would be going downhill towards Roosevelt. And to the left of the image is the LR1 zone and adjacent property.
Okay. And is that Mr. Overruder's property there, as far as you're aware, the left-hand side of the direction we're facing?
Yes.
And you mentioned the landscaping buffer. Can you describe where that's located in this graphic?
Yes, so it is beyond the fence and screen, moving further back behind the gate there.
And is it the landscaping we see just abutting the house there on the left-hand side?
Yes.
And you had mentioned a secondary exit in the rear of the building. Where is the primary exit?
It's down on Roosevelt.
And I'd like you to talk briefly about the rezone criteria and just the process that you went through with the city.
Yes, so when we submitted for the master use permit, we included the rezone application that goes through the analysis of the criteria for rezone from the municipal code, and through correction rounds with the planner, we've provided two addenda to the application to provide additional information and for the criteria analysis. And a lot of the height, bulk, and scale transition was also addressed through the design review process as far as the zone transition to the LR1. And during that, we had our initial recommendation packet, and we provided multiple rounds of studies with Allison looking at this transition particularly. And I believe that some of those were embedded in either the Addenda 1 or Addenda 2 of the rezone application.
And did you look at the LR1 zone in this analysis as well?
The LR1 zone of the neighbor or of the rezone property?
Just when evaluating the rezone criteria.
Yes, we looked at the LR1 criteria, and the functional criteria for it focuses on row house and townhouse development, which would not be feasible on a 30-foot portion of the site.
Now I'm just going to show you exhibit, the city's exhibit 15, and is this the rezone application that you just referenced in your testimony?
Yes.
And I don't want to take you through the entire document. Can you just explain briefly again what the purpose of this document was?
Yes, so it goes through a summary of the rezone request and also the I'm pulling that up here real quick too. The criteria that is evaluated through the municipal code requirements.
And is that the chapter 23-34?
Correct.
Okay, great. And you mentioned also some addendum. Can you describe what the purpose of the addendum is for? I'm going to show you these exhibits 16, identified as rezone application addendum number 1.
Correct, yes. So through the initial review of the MUP and the rezone application, the planner included additional items to supplement the analysis of the rezone criteria.
And I'm just going to pull up exhibit 17, and number 2. And if you can talk about this document.
Yes, so the second addendum was providing the last round of comments from the planner with additional graphics to provide to support the criteria analysis.
Mr. Griffin, while you're looking, I just I didn't catch the exhibit number. I know you got it on the record, but just for my notes, for the rezone application submittal information sheet, it was a couple exhibits back that you brought up.
Yeah, would you like me to pull that back up on the screen?
No, I just needed the exhibit number.
Yes, that is exhibit 15.
Thank you.
And at this time, I would like to offer what would be exhibit 74. Just for the completeness of the record, we had offered just a selection of the comprehensive plan specific to the Roosevelt District, and then we provided a link within our witness exhibit list to the entire comprehensive plan as exhibit 75. This would be the zoning graphic that Ms. Hatfield referenced, and again, we'll upload a subsequent exhibit with the corrected page 2 of that PDF. And then as exhibit 76 is Ms. Hatfield's CV.
Yes, So let's just go ahead and, do you want to admit all of the exhibits from applicant now? We could just do that.
Yeah, so that would be 74, 75, 76, and then the only other exhibit would be the CV of Matt Palmer, who is the only additional witness that we intend to call.
All right, so that brings us up to exhibit 79, is that correct?
70.
I was not intending on uploading or on offering the CVs for the two witnesses that we did not call.
Very good.
Their reports are part of the record, so it's easier.
Right.
I'm fine including those.
No, that's fine. We can just do up to 77. And I believe my legal assistant has the correct numbers and exhibits indicated. And we're going to be doing, and it's 74 is the comprehensive plan, is that correct?
Yes.
And
that's correct. And I just because it's so large,
sure.
I included the section.
Very good. All right. Exhibit 74 to 77 are admitted.
And then I guess one final procedural question. As I mentioned, we do intend to upload that corrected exhibit. Should I check the examiner's record first before uploading it to make sure no additional exhibits have been uploaded, or just upload it at 78 and if it needs to be changed?
Oh, just go ahead. Don't worry about, thank you, Mr. Gribben. Don't worry about the numbering. I will address that in the recommendation if there's additional comments that come in.
Thank you. So, Mr. Examiner, I don't have any further questions for Ms. Hatfield.
Very good.
Time.
Thank you, Ms. Hatfield.
Thank you.
Okay. And the applicant will call Matt Palmer as his second witness.
Okay.
Hello.
Morning. Please state your name and spell it.
It's Matt Palmer, M-A-T-T-P-A-L-M-E-R.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony provided in today's hearing to be the truth?
I do.
Very good. Your witness, Mr. Gribben.
Good morning, Mr. Palmer. Can you explain what you do for a living?
Yeah, I'm a traffic engineer, and I've been doing transportation planning throughout the Puget Sound area for over 20 years.
Great. And I'm going to pull up what in evidence as Exhibit 77, and this is a copy of your CV. You see that on your screen in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. And can you just take us through your education and work experience briefly?
Yeah, I got my Bachelor's of Science in Civil Engineering from the University of Iowa. Graduated in 2001. I moved out to Washington State directly from there and worked for the Washington State Department of Transportation for about a year and a half. And then I actually joined Gibson Traffic Consultants at that time, and had been with them all the way until December of 2021. I became a registered professional engineer in the state of Washington in 2006, and I'm a member of the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Been doing work, like I said, basically throughout the Puget Sound area. I'm licensed in the state of Washington, so all throughout Washington, but mostly specifically in Seattle and Bellevue, Kirkland area.
And you mentioned you were with Gibson until 2021. Where do you currently work?
I'm currently at Kimley Horn and Associates, and actually Gibson Traffic Consultants. All of the principals from Gibson Traffic Consultants, we are all now currently employed by Kimley Horn and Associates.
And can you describe your involvement with this project?
Yeah, I was the registered PE that was responsible for the work product. I reviewed and worked on the traffic impact analysis for this project from the beginning.
And was this when you were employed by Gibson?
Yes, I was at Gibson Traffic Consultants at the time.
So I'm going to show you what's in evidence as Exhibit 32. you see that on your screen?
I see something that says search rapid.
Try that one. There we go. Do you see the report on your screen now?
Yes, I do.
And can you just take us through what you did with the report?
Yeah, so this was a pretty standard traffic impact analysis for the city of Seattle. As the site generated, I believe, less than 20 PM peak hour trips, we provided the trip generation based on the Institute of Transportation Engineers trip generation manual. We took credit for the existing uses on site, which included the small automobile care center and then the single family detached. And then we did trip generation based off the site plan that we had that showed 91 units. In addition to that, we distribute those trips to the road system. As the site was not providing any parking or a parking garage, we tend to then distribute the trips a little bit further away from the site because people are going to have to walk, basically park in the surrounding area. So we distribute those trips. Those trips then impact different screen lines throughout the city that they use to kind of monitor how much volume is using the road system and whether or not the adjacent roads are reaching capacity or not. And then finally, I believe for this one, we also included a parking demand and utilization study, which showed that parking was currently being utilized at 72%, but with project and with 10 pipeline developments, there would be a maximum parking utilization in the area of approximately 88%.
And as for your page, page 10 of the report, and do you see the Section 8 conclusions?
Yes, I do.
And can you summarize the conclusions for us?
Yeah, so as I described, it basically shows that the project will only generate a total of less than 10 p.m. peak hour trips during the critical time, which is usually the p.m. A.M. trip generation. In this case, it was higher, but it tends to be lower. Usually, a.m. trip generation is only 70% of the p.m. peak hour. This mid-rise land use is a little bit of an anomaly in that case. But with less than, like I said, when we typically have less than 20 to 25 trips, it really is a quite minor development. And then we identified, based off census tract data, how many of the residents were likely to utilize public transit, maybe would walk to work or work from home. And also, like I said, it also summarized the parking demand as well. And the parking, not just the parking demand, but the utilization of on-street parking, which was actually surveyed from basically an 800-foot radius around the entire site.
And what is your opinion on whether or not there's sufficient parking to accommodate the project?
Yeah, based on the showing a parking utilization of 88%, I would say that there is, and that included not only the development, but also 10 pipeline projects that were also within that 800-foot radius of the site. I would say that parking is one of the better locations to be able to support the parking demand for the site. I've done it.
Can you explain what you mean with the pipeline project?
Yeah, so a pipeline project is a project that has already been approved and it might not have been constructed yet or might not even be occupied yet. It could even be under construction at the time. But what we did was we took the number of units that were proposed for that development, and then we calculated out what its parking demand is using Right Side Parking Calculator, and then we apply those parked trips, the demand for those parked vehicles to the surrounding street system if those developments were also not providing any on-site parking.
And you mentioned public transportation. Is this project located near public transportation?
Yeah, this project is approximately a quarter mile just north of the Roosevelt Station, the light rail, in addition to busing that's along in the area as well.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was the applicant's final witness. Assuming there's no further public comment at this point.
Very good. Is there anything further from either the city or the applicant?
Yes, Mr. Hearing Examiner, this is Tammy Garrett. Just wanted to state that during Mr. Gribbin's questioning of me, I inferred that SDCI transportation planner issued some correction notices concerning the transportation material that was submitted to SDCI.
Yes.
And during our break, I researched that, and it appears that SDCI did not issue a correction notice concerning the parts.
Okay, very good. I see the corrections on the land use and the others in there. Okay. Anything further from either the city or the applicant?
Nothing further from the applicant.
Okay. Is there anyone on the line that intended to provide public testimony or public comment and has not had an opportunity to do so at this time by now? Hearing none, we've completed the public comment period. Due to just the technical nature of signing into Zoom and accessing the hearing, because we don't know if someone may have been trying to access and didn't, I will keep the public comment record open through the end of the day, Friday, July 8th. During that time, Mr. Gribbin will be, as indicated, he'll be submitting an amended exhibit as well, but I don't anticipate any further from the parties. Anything that will be received will be duly noted in the recommendation and admitted to the record. The hearing examiner also intends to do a site visit that will not likely occur until next week. On conclusion of the site visit, the record will fully close, and we're on track for getting a decision issued within 15 days following the close of the record. Any questions about process or how we're proceeding before we conclude?
Just one question. If additional public comments were offered, would we be notified, or would we need to check the examiner's website to see if anything new had been uploaded?
That's a good question, Mr. Gribbin. What we'll do is a copy of anything that is submitted following the hearing today through Friday will be provided to the applicant and the city. And the hearing examiner office will take that on to distribute it. As I don't, you know, there's no service requirements here, so we'll take on making sure that applicant and the city get copies of that. If there's any need for response or comment from the city or applicant on those, please provide a simple written motion for continuance of the record, and I'll reopen it to allow additional comment. Otherwise, I'll assume that we can close the record for additional comments on Friday, and then the final closing of the record will be when I get my site visit done next week. All right.
Mr. Examiner, I have a follow-up question.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You identified three documents, three plan sets that identified on our exhibit list but aren't physical.
Yes.
You don't have physical copies of those documents.
Yes.
Did you need for SDCI to submit those documents to you?
No, the physical documents, while useful, are really for my use during the hearing. And it does help for ease of use when I'm writing the decision, but I see that you submitted electronic copies of those, and I don't need you to take any further step with regard to those exhibits.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you for asking. Anything else? All right, with that, then the hearing today is closed. Record remains open as indicated. Thank you all for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.